SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. We'll call it hour three, just a couple of minutes ahead, enjoying Royal Ascot, and we're going to enjoy a visit from Dr. Stephen Allday. Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. And as always, our topics are ripped from today's headlines, and we'll talk to Dr. Allday. And first we say good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Where are we finding you today? Where are you?
Churchill Downs.
Very nice. Very nice. So yeah. doing some practitioning.
Yeah.
Well, I want to take the opportunity on two topics. First of all, your impressions now that Triple Crown is over. We touched base during it and saw a horse come through seemingly gaining momentum, Steve, as the sequence went, and it feels like this is a uniquely hardy horse, your Triple Crown take.
Well, not much take. I mean, you know, 3 for 3, you know, and 6 for 6 lifetime, that's about as good as it gets. Undefeated, you know, the only second one in the history of 143 attempts or something like that, so... That's major league stuff. Obviously, you know, he's just a superior individual compared to his peers. And, it's such a rarity that you get a Triple Crown winner, but to get one, it's only races at 3. And then to basically dominate his peers the way this horse did, that's pretty special stuff. So I think, you know, if anybody didn't see it, I think he really got to watch a real piece of history in the making and during the period of time, and then also obviously during the races. So hats off, tons of respect, great outfit. Got the job done, and that's what counts. That's what they're paid to do.
One of the things, and Baffert yesterday joined us, and I asked him, you know, how surprised he is at the way the horse keeps coming back from these efforts, and Baffert specifically said he keeps eating everything that's put in front of him. And we've heard and learned from you over the years the fact, Steve, that he keeps eating, you know, so aggressively, that Baffert says everything that is put in front of him. And I think we may have lost Steve. Yeah, we did. To me, that's one of the things. When a horse starts to go off form, one of the things they'll do is they'll leave. You know, if they're tired, if they're wrung out, they will leave food in their tub. And I want Steve to address that, and then we'll morph it into the summer heat topic, and something we haven't discussed in a long time, actually. And Steve's coming back. Steve, I was talking about yesterday Baffert noting the horse continues to eat everything that they put in front of him. And, you know, you've taught us over the years when a horse backs away from the feed and is wrung out and starting to show signs of wear, that they will leave food in their tub. What should people ever look for when a horse is starting to show signs that they're going to go off form?
Well, Steve, I think maybe you misread some. You know, it's a pretty typical statement that horses, you know, don't come out of their tub and whatever. I mean, that's kind of like as old as, you know, basically no foot, no horse. I mean, I can give you every cliche there is. I'm not a big believer. You know, that if a horse is not eating, I mean, obviously if they're not eating, there's a problem, and due to numerous situations. Could be ulcers, could be, you know, gastrointestinal. I mean, you know, Kyle, like, you know, I mean, I give you everything under the sun for that. But the fact that they are still eating, I don't put a lot of, you know, credo just directly in that being the only, you know, like that's the gold standard. I think it's a combination of if a horse is eating well and they are training well and they are maintaining their weight and their coat looks healthy. I'm a big believer in weighing horses. If a horse is recovering from big efforts and is putting weight back on appropriately, that's a real, real big, great sign that the horse is really doing well. And obviously the fact that they're, you know, hitting the ground good, they're staying really sound. And the combination of all these things really make a huge difference. I don't think it's just one thing. I think it's just a combination of, you know, that they're resting, that they're, you know, comfortable, that they get up, they still want to train, they are animated, they're aggressive. I mean, you know, it's a pretty smart horse. I mean, I saw the night after the evening after the race. I mean, this horse laid down, you know, in his shavings, and he was getting rest. I mean, he was, you know, he's obviously takes good care of himself. So not only is this a really, really gifted athlete, but he's extremely intelligent, and he's not one of these. He's a big to begin with, so that's a big one. But the fact that you got a horse that big and that's doing that well and continues to thrive, it's all those things point to the fact that, like, you know, you've got a superior genetic animal, and obviously he can perform accordingly.
Yeah, and we're anxious to see where things go from here. We do have a story from the weekend that you can address, and it's something we've talked about over the years, but not in a while. And we've explained what the thumps are. We've talked about non-sweaters. We've talked about the adjustment that barns make when the temperatures rise and it gets hot. And Steve, I'd love for you to run them down. Feels like Graham Motion is struggling with heat, with Irish War Cry. Explain to everybody the kinds of things that can bother horses when the warm weather rolls around.
Well, the thumps in particular are a situation that, whereas it's uncontrollable or it's involuntary, diaphragmatic contraction, meaning the diaphragm will tend to kind of make them almost look like a horse that's like they're having hiccups, sort of, you know, I mean, it sort of looks like that. And it makes a noise like a thump, like when it occurs. And this is typically associated when an animal, a horse in particular, has an electrolyte imbalance, typically when the potassium tends to be a little bit on the low side. And it indicates that, you know, you've either given maybe too much Lasix and or, you know, and we tend to see it a lot more, obviously, when it's hot or when there's a lot of heat and, or, you know, in the hotter part of the year. We do see it in the wintertime sometimes, but just not very often. So, but bottom line is it's a pretty, you know, really, really good indicator, actually, that a horse has an electrolyte imbalance and that they, you know, you've got to go ahead and address that, get a blood pulled and decide exactly how you're going to address it. And then also, you know, you may have to, you know, try to, you know, balance out certain things, you know, and as far as diet's concerned, as far as Lasix medication's concerned, things of this nature as well.
Differentiate the what, and I think you've established the benchmark, but differentiate it from a non-sweater, from a horse that struggles with the heat because they can't let the heat out.
Well, you know, when a horse goes through a hyperthermia, it's a totally different situation, Steve. Typically, a horse that gets overheated and has hyperthermia, they will collapse. Their body temperature will exceed sometimes up to 105, 6, 7 degrees. You know, and this is more common, obviously, if a horse is a non-sweater, because obviously one of the cooling mechanisms is the sweating mechanism itself. So combination of these things can make a huge huge difference in how you control it, and how you're going to treat it is totally different too. Obviously, electrolytes are called for, but obviously hydration and then also loading core body temperature is really, really important right away and as soon as possible. So they do, you don't really go through uncontrolled, involuntary contracture with overheating or, in the heat prostration, but you obviously do, and it can happen either if it's extremely humid and or if it's extremely, like I said, you've got a balance, you use too much Lasix, things like this, or, things of this nature. So bottom line is that, they do differentiate themselves quite literally. I mean, a horse can still function with thumps. They just don't function very well. A horse with heat prostration can basically collapse and expire fairly quickly. So you have to make a determination right away if there's a problem. But thumps tend to come on gradually, and they're not nearly as they can be fairly aggressive, but they're not usually as bad a sign as the other as far as, like, heat prostration.
How does a horseman find out? I mean, you could get a two-year-old in the fall, go through the winter with them. You might not be, in a place where there's the opportunity to notice any of these kinds of issues. Is there any hinting that a horse will give? Are there any, let's say, tangential symptoms that if they're a non-sweater, there's some other issues that can accompany it?
Yeah, typically, Steve, horses that become non-sweaters, as you see them in, let's say, places like Florida, Louisiana, Texas, things like this, somewhere along the Gulf Coast. But you can see it sometimes other places. But these are more common areas when it's really, really hot, really, really high humidity days. And then all of a sudden you go to pull tack off and there's barely or hardly any sweat after exertion. You know you pretty much got a problem. And especially after an exertion like a race. Yeah. And then, the first thing you do is obviously you get them behind a fan, you give them an alcohol water bath. You go ahead and try to get ice on them and or cold water to try to take the place of the sweat that would normally be released so that it will evaporate. For every gram of water, you lose 540 calories of heat. So obviously, the more water you put on and it actually evaporates off, the faster you'll lower the temperature.
Interesting. Run, say that again. What's the ratio of
the calories, you mean, of heat?
Yeah.
Yeah, for every gram of water, that's 540 calories of heat that is dissipated off the surface during the evaporation process. So that's obviously quite a few calories.
Well, and then that leads that's a perfect segue into the change in feeding programs. We see the summer heat feed bags. Explain the balance in terms of nutrients and the way horses are what the adjustments are when it comes to their nutritional needs in the warm temperatures.
Well, that's a good question, and the reason why that's important is if horses are housed in cold environments, there's a certain amount of calories that have to be maintained in order to just alone to maintain core body temp at a normal level. In the summertime, you don't necessarily have to have as much, so you can cut back on certain types of carbohydrates and certain caloric demands to where you can get back to where a horse is because the ambient temperature remains pretty, regular for their actual heat demands of the core temp. So what ends up happening is you can cut back on the total calories. Well, you'll notice that, that as you switch diets from summer or to winter or winter to summer or even in spring to summer, you can cut back on a lot of the carbohydrates and or certain things and give a little bit more fiber and a little bit more hay and obviously a little less carbohydrates, corn, things like this. Where in the wintertime that would be required. And you might actually have to keep a certain condition score on a horse. You may actually have to give more feed in the wintertime in order to get the maximum, maintenance of condition score and or their body score for their development and or to keep or be maintained training as far as like normal training and to keep them in a situation where they stay the same. You want to try to keep a horse on the same condition score routinely and get the recovery to that between efforts so you can get the maximum performance out of the horse from race to race.
What costs or what burns more energy and within a horse, keeping cool or staying cool or keeping warm?
Well, it's totally different. Cooling is mainly maintained by hydration and or the sweating mechanism, whereas heat is maintained by internal metabolism, okay? And a certain amount, you'll notice that, you know, when you pull the blanket off a horse in the wintertime, you'll notice when they're standing in a shed row and it's 20 degrees outside or 5 below 0, whatever, that in order to maintain that core temp, they'll start shivering, okay? They'll sense cool, and it gets below their thermoregulatory level, so they'll shiver in order to generate heat, and that burns calories. And the same thing will occur, obviously, the reason why in the summertime is because, they'll sweat, and they'll evaporate a bunch of heat off, because that's what basically loses the heat off the core, so it can lower the temperature. So each one has, you know, a distinct meaning as to like what is actually occurring and how you maintain, you know, normal homeostasis or normal physiology so an animal can function and thrive in a training environment.
Interesting. It's obviously timely, and people heard the feedback after Irish War Cry. This is now really, I think, the second. Really, the third time in 2.5 years that this is affected, and Graham was hopeful that a cooler night, you know, that night racing would provide a potentially cooler ambient.
Steve, we had an incredible hot weekend, and I think we set a record temperature wise, and the humidity was extremely high, so. It may not have been the night racing. It may have been the environment, you know, the environmental factors, meaning the high humidity that basically threw this horse's, his electrolyte balance out of whack in combination with medication for racing and this sort of thing. So bottom line is, they got to go back to the drawing board and figure out what they did. The shipping may have contributed to it. And in addition, I don't know when they got him in here, but if he came down in proximity, it was extremely hot for the 4 or 5 days prior to, and the day after we set a record here in Louisville for heat factor. It was extremely hot. I mean, on Father's Day, it was unbelievable. So, I mean, all these factors add up with the Lasix that, you know, maybe there was a something that got a little out of whack on the horse, and obviously it was, affected his performance because he didn't run very well. He was pulled up and bent off, so.
Yeah, and he's okay, and that's the good news. And one of the challenges. Every place you look, every corner, Steve. Well, looking forward. I know we'll see you at Saratoga soon enough.
Yes, sir.
We're off the next couple of weeks, but Steve, thanks for a great first half of the year as always. You should be following Four Legs Doc, and you should be checking out thealldayway.com if you want to ask Steve and Alex Hassinger any questions about your sport horse, your pleasure horse, your race horse. They're always available for you. And Lubricin Reborn, we talk about absolute game-changing products that Dr. Allday has brought forward now for humans, pets, and virtually everything on 2 and 4 feet.
Thanks, Steve. Take care.
I appreciate it. Everybody enjoys Dr. Allday's visits because we learn. I mean, every time you discuss these things, we just areas of the sport that we as horse players, you certainly don't know. As owners, any vet that is servicing your horse, they'll be happy to answer any questions you have. But invaluable what 13 years of listening to Steve Allday has taught us. Let's take a timeout here, although wait a minute, we may not be able to take a timeout because I think we're going to have to stay 3 minutes, Case, to the St. James Palace, the last grade one, group one of the morning. And yeah, we'll stay here and we'll go right up to this race. They actually have not been, they've been going off a couple of minutes past post virtually all morning. Let me give you a few of the prices while we have a chance. Accidental Agent, the upsetter that kicked off the day, 84-80 here, and 20-20 to place. And then even Lord Glitters and Lightning Spear were square prices. The Tri Box, wow, a $1 try, 186, $6,692 with the 40-1 winner. So really, boxcars to start the morning. Then Calix, the two-year-old, 540 for Khalid Abdullah. The Judd Monteem, John Gosden, Frankie Dettori, 540 to win with Advertise and Sergey Prokofiev, 7-1-20. 7-1-20, the try there, 103. And really, Calix and Sergey Prokofiev were the first two choices, and Advertise was the third choice. So if you keyed the favorite, $100, 103 is a nice price. How about that? That's a big number. And then Blue Point, 1560. Very nice. Very nice. Well over 6-1. And Batash second, and Mabs Cross, 2-1-11, a $308 try here. The Swinger, for those of you that see The Swinger and you're not familiar, it's also known as an Omni. And Andy had the greatest name for it. There was a chance it was coming to the U.S., the Imperfecta. Basically, any combination of the three horses, first, second, first, third, second, third. That's what a swinger is. And you get, you know, you get any combination of those horses. It's kind of an easy way to introduce people to two horse, you know, to two horse wagers, without confusing them. So we've had decent prices here. The $84 winner certainly, and then a nice try. And those were the top three horses in the bookie market too: Calix, Sergey Prokofiev, and Advertise. And you know, Advertise, while we're on the topic, Advertise from Martin Mead, with that placement at a nice price, 13-1. Martin Mead has a price in this St. James Palace. Chilean. This is another Ifraj. Interesting. This is a 3-year-old, they're all 3-year-olds, of course, Manton Estate Racing. This horse is taking money at certain betting shops, is as low as 20-1, 25, 28, and then starts to go into the 30s. Chilean is taking some goofy action in this St. James, the one horse. 40-1 on the tote. So be aware of Chilean. 2-1 on Without Parole, the Gunther Homebred, and we're certainly wishing them best of luck here. John Gosden sends out the 3-for-3 Frankel Son. And Frankie Dettori aboard. 2-1. U.S. Navy Flag for Coolmore. 5-2. U.S. Navy Flag. Your second choice. Third choice, Tip to Win. The Dark Angel Colt. Roger Teal trains. Was 5-1 morning line and is taking money. 7-2. And in the shops is a co-third choice with Wooten. Wooten's taking money in the shops. It has actually now moved from 10-1 down to 7-1 on the tote. So this is a fairly confused board. Here's Romanized. Romanized, a Holy Roman Empire colt that is 5-1 as well. And so you've got five horses that are within 5 points of each other. So the market is a little jumbled going into this St. James Palace. It is post time, and they're making their way behind the ring, and they'll go the mile. A couple of other considerations. Gustav Klimt. This is Coolmore as well. Looking at 13-1 for Klimt. 11-1 now, actually. I take that back, from 13 down to 11-1 in the last couple of flashes. And also in the teens, Gabra, G-A-B-R. This is Sheikh Hamdan, who's been very active. Sir Michael Stout sends out this Intello colt. 17-1 currently. And then the two or three big prices, 3 and 4 pence, who's a war front, and we're ready.
The last of them to get away from the round mile start for this St. James Palace Stakes. Purple jacket of U.S. Navy flag sticks a little bit wide of the others in the early strides. Without Parole and King's Shield are giving chase. The white and black jacket of Chilean behind those, and then comes Gab. Another one in white and black colors is Tipped to Win. A dark blue of Gustav Klimt is just preceding him. Wooten is next, and Wooten then is followed by 3 and 4 pence. And Romanized is the back marker as they head now down towards the final 5 furlongs. It's a good gallop. They're well stretched out. It's a 3-length lead for U.S. Navy Flag. He's pursued by King Shield, and then comes Without Parole. White sleeve jacket 2.5 lengths further back. Heading to halfway, Chilean's 1 length behind him in fourth position. The blue and white of Gabra, 1.5 lengths. Behind him, the dark blue next as they head towards the home turn of Gustav Klimt. He's away on this U.S. Navy Flag. He's heading with a 5-length lead on the home turn. 3 and 4 pence and Romanized at the back of the field. Wooten behind those. But as they level up for home, U.S. Navy Flag and Ryan Moore with now a 3-length lead. Without Parole and King Shield in second and third places. Gabba behind those. Then Chilean. Romanized down the center. Without Parole is trying to get to U.S. Navy Flag. He's got past him. Without Parole is the leader. Gustav Klimt has moved into second. Tipped to Win and Romanized down the center. Well inside the last furlong. Without Parole with a 2-length lead. Gustav Klimt is closing, though. Without Parole leading by a 1/2 length. Gustav Klimt is getting to with every shy, but Frankie and Without Parole have won. Gustav Klimt in second. Wooten has run on, I think, to snatch third position, laid on from Tip to Win.
Well, there's even a better North American moment when it comes to the Gunthers, and 4 for 4. That felt like, as we got closer to this race, that people were trying to find reasons to go against Without Parole, and he comes through very, very nicely timed ride by Frankie Dettori, who, you know, waited, did not panic when U.S. Navy Flag, turning for home, was maintaining a nice lead and was going comfortably enough, and then very quickly corralled him. In probably less than a 16th, and then had just enough to hold out the late charge of Gustav Klimt, and actually certainly maintained, you call it a long, long neck, almost a 1/2 length, and it would have taken another 16th or 8th, I think, for Gustav Klimt, the Galileo colt for Coolmore, to get by the winner Without Parole, the Frankel homebred colt. What a thrill. What a cap of a fortnight for John and Tanya Gunther. Incredible. Incredible. Breed and watch your horse go out, your horse that you crafted, win the Triple Crown, make it through as the second undefeated Triple Crown winner since Seattle Slew, or the only other. And then, a week later, 9 days later, go to Royal Ascot and win the St. James Palace with your homebred. Unbelievable. Congratulations to the Gunthers. Amazing. 9-3-10-7. And the 9-3-10 in particular is going to be a pretty nice return, because double digits with Gustav Klimt, 13-1, 11-1 for Wooten. And as I'd mentioned, the Wooten was one of the horses that was trading in the market significantly lower than he was on the tote. And a very nice disparity opportunity there was 6-1 in the shops and 11-1 on the tote. So if you keyed off of Without Parole, you did okay. Bottom of the hour, and as is always the case every year now when we have these Royal Ascot races, so much fun, and the day flies by. Nacho Correas is going to visit with us here before we wrap up. Let's take a time out and come right back at the races. Royal Ascot, and we're through the group stake portion of the morning. The Ascot Stakes will go as the fifth, and then the Windsor Castle for those of you that are playing on noon and 12:35, the next two race opportunities at Royal Ascot. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest, we know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use Express Fund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void where prohibited. National Gambling Support Line, 800-522-4700.
Pennsylvania's breeding program is truly the most lucrative in North America. Now, we'll pay a 50% breeder award for PA-sired, PA-bred maidens who run first, second, or third, with 25% for non-PA-sired, PA-breds. Last year, the number of mares bred rose by 15% in Pennsylvania. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at PABred.com.
Exciting daytime Southern California Thoroughbred racing action returns to beautiful Orange County with the opening of the Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet on Thursday, June 28th. It's 3 great weeks of daytime Thoroughbred racing at Los Alamitos. First post is set for 1 p.m. Pacific each racing day. We'll race Thursday through Sunday during the opening week and closing week of the meet, while the second week of the meet will include a special Independence Day card on Wednesday, the 4th of July, followed by racing on Friday through Sunday afternoon. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet will feature 3 exciting stakes races, beginning with the Bertrando Stakes, highlighting our special 4th of July card. Other stakes races include the Grade 2 Great Lady M Stakes on Saturday, July 7th, and the Grade 3 Los Alamitos Derby on Saturday, July 14th. Join us on track or at your favorite satellite or ADW provider for major daytime thoroughbred racing in America's longest home stretch. The Los Alamitos Summer Thoroughbred Meet opens on Thursday, June 28th. First post is 1 p.m. Pacific. For more info, go to losalamitos.com.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
An old friend came
We're back at the races. About 25 minutes on this Tuesday, the start of Royal Ascot. We've had so much fun the first four races of the five-day stand on pretty much almost, I guess we got, the one tomorrow, the one group one is the Prince of Wales, and then the Gold Cup on Thursday, and then the two on Friday, the Commonwealth and the Coronation, and then the Diamond Jubilee on Saturday. And, of course, the unique circumstance where you've got the potential for horses to participate in you know, two group ones in 5 days, which we very frequently they'll run back out of the King Stand and come back for the Diamond Jubilee. We'll watch for that, and it's been really, it's been great. Always flies by. Saturday night flew by as well, watching as Justify was celebrated. That came fairly early in the evening, and then all the great racing. And we talked to Baffert yesterday about the Justify experience, and talked to Doug O'Neill about the Foster win. Happy as always to have Nacha Correas join us and talk about Blue Prize. She won her way to the distaff, and nice to get the win and you're in portion of the opportunity. And she has always run well at Churchill whenever she's had the opportunity, and no exception. I thought, Nacho, congratulations. I thought she was spectacular Saturday night.
Thank you, Steve. Good to be with you. And every time I'm with you is because I'm doing good, so I'm always happy to be with you. And, she was great. And Jose, you know, give her a great ride, sitting behind the speed, and we are all very happy. She came out very well out of the race, and you know, looking forward to see how, you know, which path we go to the Breeders, we take to the Breeders' Cup. But I think that we already have an idea, so everything is good. We are all very, very happy about her. I'm very proud of her.
The notable aspects of this and of her, the mile in the eighth, that's her best distance. And you know, now she's 2 for 4 at Churchill with 2 seconds. So really, you just got to bide your time between now and the fall. I mean, it just feels like you just want to work backwards.
Yeah, I mean, it's the thing for her is, I think that it's a big difference for her to a mile and an eighth and a mile and a 16th. It might sound incredible for that 16th of a mile only, but it makes a big difference for her. And if it was, you know, a mile and a quarter, a mile and 3/8, probably would be better for her. But, and I think that the pace is completely different on a mile and a 16th. You have a lot of milers that step up, so they go, you know, way faster in the beginning, and when you go at that level, they don't come back to you very easy. You know, they usually keep going, and so yeah, we're looking forward to that. I think that we might take a trip to Saratoga for the personal dancing, and then stay at home and go for the spinster and then Breeders' Cup.
Very so nice. And
try to ship, you know, once more, and then try to stay around home so she doesn't have to go, you know, very far from home. And we have, you know, and sincerely, I think that those are the two races that she needs, because they're a mile and an eighth first. She ran well at Saratoga, so I think that she liked that track. And she liked Keeneland. She train here every day. I mean, the Spinster even was probably the worst rain that we have seen in a long time. You know, in Keeneland when the races are there, and I still don't think that she liked the slop, and she even figured it out to finish third that day. So, I mean, we'll see if we get there and, you know, try to get, you know, the best ones and see what we can do against them. Even if I think that the field that we beat on Saturday was a remarkable field.
Two things. I wanted, you bring up the wet track, and people, when they're handicapping, they'll look at the chart and they'll see wet track, four tries, a win, 2 seconds, and a third, and they'll say, okay, this horse is okay in the wet. Has never been off the board, but every wet track is different, and the composition of the, you know, whether it's like a Churchill, the clay, which the horses seem to get over, you know, much easier. Keeneland is different. Pimlico, that was a sea of slop. So even though they're all sloppy tracks, they're different in their own way.
Yeah, they're all different, and I think that she ran good because she's good and she always tries hard. But I'm not saying that she cannot do it. I'm saying that it's not the best for her. That is different.
Sure.
No, I mean, and it's like she have won also, you know, on an off track in Argentina. But the difference is in Argentina, you have 3/8 of a mile. She have a different style. She came from way off the pace. She was always almost dead last coming home. And then, you know, you can smoke a couple of cigarettes until you get to the wire there. Here is when you get home, you need to kick because, I mean, the wire is there. So she have to change her style. Her first race his first time out in America was in at Churchill, and on the 5/8, she was like 10 lengths behind. And I thought, you know, this doesn't look good. You know, she was training so good. I'm going to champion 3-year-old filly running that last first time out. Pretty good, you know. And then she came up with a run the last 3/8, but wasn't enough. So that's why we needed to change her style. But I still think that it's not her best track. I'm not saying that she cannot run on a wet track, but I don't think that she gets the best. You get the best out of her.
Address Jose Ortiz, and I'm curious, you know, after the nice win in the spring at Aqueduct, you end up with the DuPont and the messy track. And I also don't think that Ortiz, if he had it to do over again, I mean, a duel on the lead, it certainly looked on Saturday night that he had a different approach. Did you guys discuss sitting off the pace specifically?
Well, I think that, you know, it's easy, you know, when you speak, you know, a month after the race, something like that. But the approach was, I told him, the only instructions that I give him is you sit, you know, a couple of lengths off the pace and you wait. And if you got beat for the leaders, just don't worry about it. There's nothing that you can do. Just, no, stay close to the leaders, have an eye on them. But if you lose because the horse in the lead beat you, I mean, that things happen. You can't control. You need to ride your horse. And I thought that there was a lot of speed on the race. I think that they wasn't. It was more on the paper that they finally was at the end. But, I mean, and he put her on the right race and he gave her, you know, a masterclass ride to her. I mean, he was great. And I think that, you know, also, Jose have rode her, you know, three times only. He's getting to know her. I mean, she's not easy. So he was surprised of how much different she was this coming weekend than when she rode her the other two times. He said that she really kicked this time. You know, and so maybe it's that she probably doesn't like, you know, that's what I'm told when she doesn't say that she doesn't like, you know, the mud. Even if I think that probably if she sits, you know, one or two lengths behind, might be different the outcome of that race. But that is, we are happy with what we have now. I think that she have taught everybody of us, I mean me, Jose, everybody, you know, the way that she likes to run. I think that she have a very nice style when you're going to face tough company. And I mean, we look forward and try to stay out of her way and let her do her thing like she have been doing.
Well, there's a lot of good things that you can see happening with Blue Prize. You know, last year when we talked, she was kind of moving forward and you know, falling a little short. You know, she ran into some hot horses, including Romantic Vision and Verve's Tale, and to see her win three of her last five, I mean, it's nice to make that next step, and it feels like, you know, she's just a more polished horse at five as a mare.
Yeah, I mean, I think she have improved a lot, and mentally she have improved a lot. You know, she can handle better, you know, the paddock. I remember her saddling the first time she went to Saratoga. It was almost a challenge. I mean, like, she almost kicked me three or four times behind the pony. We have to saddle her on the walk. I mean, she's getting better all around. She's more mature and take the age very well. So, and she's still four in Argentina, so I think that
that's right.
She can still get a little better, and I don't know, you know, what the ceiling will be. Hopefully, take us, you know, a long time to figure that out.
Well, she's clearly a distaff player for the year, and to have two wins over the surface at Churchill, where they'll run the distaff, gives a lot of confidence. Blue Prize and the win in the Fleur de Lis. Meanwhile, we're together, Nacho. Let's touch on a few other things. I see that you've got a City Zip mare running this week, Friday at Arlington, and off to a good start this summer in Chicago. Talk about Pop By, that more of a turf horse, so you got taken off the turf last to the synthetic. What do we expect on Friday?
It's more of trying something different with her. She has been giving us a lot of headaches. I mean, she trained completely different than she ran. Actually, she trained like a very good horse, and she have run for us not really well. So we are trying to do something different with her. I mean, so I expect a good effort from her, and I hope that you know, she come around for us. She haven't done it yet, but it's not the horse that we have in the morning. It's the one that we see in the afternoon. So we are trying to see if changing something, you know, we can put an effort that we can build with that. I mean, it's like the first two efforts that she gave us, they were pretty bad. So it's going to be like the strike three, or we're going to start building, I guess. There's a little of that on this race.
Okay, I understand. And she actually, this was a Flaxman product that Graham Motion got when she came to North America, and then she went through as a broodmare or racing prospect in November. Who's the group, this Phalaris, that bought her?
It's a Chilean and Peruvian group that bought her essentially to be covered, you know, in the southern hemisphere, and take her, you know, to either Chile or Peru. I don't know which will be her destination. So I guess that she's going to have to make the decision if she's going to be covered this year or not, you know, and the next race, or if we're going to keep her in training or not. She's a very good-looking filly, and she's kind of complicated to train. But, you know, as I said, in the morning she's it's a completely different horse than the one. I mean, in the morning it's a horse that is willing to train, is happy training, and in the afternoon is she just we haven't been able to put that in the afternoon yet. Hopefully we do it on Friday, and if not, I guess that we're going to pull the program. You know, let her be a mom. That's it.
Absolute. Tell us about what's next for Question de Tiempo, the factor gelding that was third in the Arlington Classic.
Well, I'm looking at an allowance in Churchill, or I might send him for an overnight stake to Canada. I'm looking forward to see him running. I mean, it's complicated. We do have a horse that have won two races already as a three-year-old, and you don't want to put him at, you know, with the top horses. It's very tough to find. It's either you put him for 75. We don't want to lose him yet, so we are trying to find the best spot possible for him, but I'm sure that he's going to be a better horse with the time. We gelded him. That was his first effort after we gelded him, and I think that he improved a lot.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye out. Meanwhile, Donna Bruja, last seen in the Jenny Wiley, she ran well, Nacho. She got overwhelmed late by some very good fillies and mares, Sister Charlie and Four-Star Crook, that turned around and ran 1-2 last week for Chad, off limits. Donna Bruja, where's she going to turn up next?
Barely straight.
Good. All right.
I think that she put a big effort. It's not her style, you know, to go to the lead. I think that race took a lot out of her. We give her a little break. And she came back working last Saturday. She did very well. So when you look at her past performance, her best efforts always come, you know, off the bench. So that's, I mean, I was thinking first before to go to the Modesty, but, you know, it's always better after 3 or 4 months that she haven't run. I mean, that's where her big numbers and her big shows come. So we're going to try to reproduce that on the Beverly D, and hopefully, you know, Chad let us, you know, win.
Well, dead heated. Well, dead heated last year for second.
Chad, you won. Put it that way. If you get
hit
by Chad, you won.
So. I love it. Let me ask you about one more. A horse that's been away. And I happened to see Belgrano back earlier in the winter on the grass. Just missed breaking his maiden. This is a horse that was bred to be a nice horse. Is he on the shelf?
It was bred to be a very nice horse. He had a problem after that race in Tampa. We sent him to the farm. He should be ready to come in the next month or so. So he's on a break. And he had a condylar fracture when I had him. I mean, he's good from that. But he was, you know, having a little pressure there on the ankle, so we give him some time off. He's very well bred, and, you know, if he's at 3, do it at 4. It's exactly the same. I mean, there's not, you know, any rush now with him. So we are waiting only. And I have something for you. You said about seeing a horse running twice in 5 days. Mr.
Yes.
Julio Pena, the brother of Angel Pena Sr., in the early 60s, won the Mile International with good time on a Saturday in Brazil, and on Sunday he won the sprint international with the same horse with good time. So he had been that before and went closer.
Yes.
He won two great ones in 2 days, Saturday and Sunday.
Well, we haven't seen that really since the Massachusetts fairs.
That was probably the only time. But it was, I guess that there were different horses, but he did it. I still don't know how, but he did it. So,
well, the only thing like that. Well, the only thing like that I can think of is Carlos Guerrero, Figueroa at the fairs when he would run a horse five times in 7 days.
but what is impressive is he won two great ones. You know, is that
that's amazing.
That makes it amazing. that unique and it was. A funny thing that I thought when you said about the 5 days rest,
that's a lot of rest. How about how you doing for some 2-year-olds? You got some 2-year-olds coming anytime soon?
I have a 2-year-old already run. I got beat by that Tapit of Marcassi at Churchill, and that he is a very decent horse. By Super Saver, Ready and Rich is his name. And then I have a filly into the south that is pretty good and might start in a couple of weeks. And I have a few more prospects. They look pretty good, actually. They're working good, and we look forward to see them, you know, out in the next, you know, month or so. So we are good. I mean, we are better than last year. We have better horses, better bred. So there are, I mean, I feel good about my 2-year-olds.
Nice. Well, that Ready and Rich, that's a Virginia bred, the Super Saver for Wimborne. And we'll keep an eye out for him coming back. But just happy to see the momentum. Nacho doing great. And Blue Prize. We'll see her at Saratoga. We'll look forward to seeing you here.
Okay. Thank you very much. And as always, you know, it's a pleasure to be with you. And thank you very much for always, you know, treating me well.
Oh, it's our pleasure. We're one of the most respected horsemen out there. And Ignacio Correas, affectionately called Nacho. And you can follow him on Twitter. Easy to root for. Notch, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Steve. Bye.
Well, we'll stay here. We got about 2 minutes to wrap up this morning, and we'll look back to the 5th now at Royal Ascot, about 4 minutes away. You'll have to listen to this one on your own because it'll come after noon. But bulky field in here, and this group in the Ascot Stakes, who knows? You're talking about 2.5 miles. And one horse came out, the 4-horse, Kairly, and otherwise 19 others will go forward. You've got a 7-2 co-favorites, more or less, the 7. This is Willie Mullins, 7-2 with Ryan Moore, Chill Carr, the 5-year-old Azamore Gelding, and Coeur de Lion, Heart of Lion, for Alan King, also 7-2. This is a Pour Moi 5-year-old. And looking up and down, really from those two, up to 10-1, Dubai We 50, Karen McClintock, Sylvester D'Souza, and you're looking at 10-1 on this Dubai We Gelding. So, 6-1 too. Under hiding on the rail was Whiskey Sour. Whiskey Sour. This is actually another Willie Mullins with Christophe Soumillon aboard, 6-1. So there's your top choices, and really had not looked at this at all. But I will give you a window to the pricing on the market, let's take a look at the bookie shops and where they stand here. You're looking at Chelkar and Coeur de Lion, 9-2 and 5-1. Whiskey Sour, Dubawi 50, 6-7-1. Lagos to Vegas, White Desert and Stratum and Danny Day, they're all 10-1, that group. So let's take a look at that group on the board and see if there's a hint. Lagos to Vegas is 13-1. White Desert, 9-1 on the tote. Stratum, 18-1. So there's your little added value. 18-1 on Stratum, Willie Mullins, who's all over the board here. Willie's got what, four? Three or four? And then the last one, Danny Day. Danny Day's taking money on our tote, but is not as well fancied on the market. This is a Rothschild gelding from Sir Michael Stout. So if we're looking for the disparity, Stratum is your horse. 18-1 on the tote and 10-1 in the bookie shops. So let's see. Mary DV and Look My Way. Let's just check while we got time. Mary DV, 20-1. And Look My Way, 19-1. So that's the horse. Stratum's our fun punch. He's the 15. Very fun. This morning flew by, as it always does. Tomorrow will too. I want to thank Tom Van Meter, Andy Serling, Nacho Correas, and Dr. Stephen Allday as well. Once this racing winds down at 12:30, you've got some other options here on the continent. Finger Lakes, Indiana Grand, Parks, Presque Isle, Thistledown, Fort Erie, Mountaineer later, Fairmount, and Louisiana Downs. Did I say Mountaineer? Good luck if you're playing the rest of the way, and we will be back with you tomorrow. Day two of Royal Ascot. Entry day around the country. Thanks, everybody. Replay 6-9 if you missed anything. Talk to you tomorrow.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
The thoroughbred breeding industry will never be the same with the launch of Daily Racing Form's Buyer-Sire Performance Standings, presented by Darley. These groundbreaking ratings use buyer speed figures to measure a stallion's performance beyond wins and earnings, focusing on providing a measurement of a sire's true ability to produce high-quality horses. View the Buyer-Sire Performance Standings at drf.com/buyer-sire and get the true information that breeds results. That's drf.com/buyer-sire.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Internationally and from coast to coast on every circuit, Biomedical Research Labs provides superior equine supplements to more than half of the leading trainers. Isn't it about time you join the family? To learn more about how EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield can fit into your program, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
With 35 years at the forefront of sports technology, Stats provides next-generation sports content for basketball, baseball, football, soccer. And now, Stats is turning its sights to horse racing. RaceLens is the most in-depth product on the market. With innovative analytics powered by data from Equibase, it will change the way you follow horse racing. Stats RaceLens, bringing clarity to handicapping. Learn more at stats.com/RaceLens.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.